Hi, this is Mike McNamara, and you're listening to All Marine Radio on your home for it, the one and only All Warrior Radio Network. Writes, but he was made for radio. Joining me is Alex Hollings. Alex, what's going on? How are you?
Hey, man. Glad to be here.
Have you ever seen the movie Ray?
Oh, you know, I did. I saw it when it first came out, and I remember thinking Jamie Foxx was great in it, but I don't remember it very well.
He was great in it. If you've never seen the movie Ray, the music's awesome. His life story is really interesting. You know, he's not born blind. What is it, like the measles or chicken pox, something like that?
Yeah, something like that. Ray, for me, is one of those movies, it's in the same category as Ali, where it was an incredible movie, and I really, really enjoyed it, but it was kind of emotionally exhausting. Like, after it was over, I was like, I saw it, I'm not going to come back to it. But it was really, really good, you know? I was amazed at Will Smith and Ali, by the way, because, I mean, at the time, he was like a scrawny little chump up until then, you know?
I've never seen it. You know, it's straight up amazing what they do with actors and how they transform their bodies to, you know, Russell Crowe. You look at Russell Crowe now, and you're like, that's the dude that was in Gladiator?
Yeah,
you know,
right?
He's like become the Stay Puft Marshmallow Man. And well, you're like, you dude, how did you do that to yourself?
And Reign of Fire, Gerard Butler was in that movie with Christian Bale, and he was like a soft little nobody. And then 2 years later, he's Leonidas in 300.
Yeah.
You know? It's crazy. I need to get on that program. I've been doing the inverse of that, where when I was like 25, I looked like Leonidas in 300, and I am increasingly looking like Christian Bale playing Dick Cheney lately.
Your life being taken over by other things, man. You have kids. You're living in the suburbs. Your mom moved down. She's living with your brother.
I have an incredible development report on my mom's like never ending house hunt.
Come on, let's hear it.
She just bought 12 acres of land with no house on it.
I'm very excited about. She's going to build a house.
Her and her husband plan to build a house. He's going to move down here. However, her husband's decided that he wants to do it, or at least oversee it.
Oh, shit.
So this is, it's...
Might be in a, so the timeline on this is a little bit squishy, to be kind?
Yeah, I would say the timeline on this is still extended out into forever, just like it was before she owned any land. But the great news for this is that now, about 45 minutes from my house, there's a nice 12-acre plot of woods.
Oh.
With one little area cleared where someone else had intended to build a house. And other than that, just woods with a state park right behind it for me to go wander around and do foolish woods things in. So this is great news for me.
I'm hearing the Hank Williams Jr. song, A Country Boy Can't Survive. I live back in the woods, you see, the woman and the kids and the dogs and me.
That song has been on my workout playlist for, it has to be 15 years. I love that song. But it doesn't fit very well when I'm blasting it from my garage with both bay doors open, working out in there, in this little bit of suburbia that I live in. My garage door's open and face directly into another neighbor's yard. I can see into two houses from where I work out.
Yeah, you're in the suburbs, man. It's like,
It's terrible, man. Yesterday, my dog got out, which was never a concern at any point in my life. My dog running loose. He's a 13-year-old Chihuahua Dachshund mix.
What?
He's not a threat to the neighborhood.
Of course. He's a threat to get himself killed, though.
Yeah. But, you know, somebody in my neighborhood showed up at my door 10 minutes after the dog got out, furious that my dog had run into his yard. And I was like, I want to tell you, man, he's a dog.
Do you want me to kick your ass right here on the front porch?
He gave me a once-over and, like, reassessed his situation as soon as I opened the door. Like, his facial expression shifted as soon as he realized that I wasn't, like, my 100-pound wife that he could be rude to. And he's just like, is this your dog? And I was like, yeah, thanks. And just shut the door in his face. I don't want to make any friends. I don't like you guys. Lord knows, somebody might even live in this neighborhood and listen to this show. And if they do, you're cool, I swear. But the rest of them, no interest.
That's awesome. No, you know, I like, you're pissed because my dog ran in your yard?
Yeah, like 5 minutes ago.
So what's going to happen when I, like, miss the street by a few feet, plow your mailbox, and do a lawn job on your lawn? I mean, are you going to be pissed about that, too?
Lord, they would lose their minds in this neighborhood. I will admit, I live in a nice house, and the neighborhood is very nice. And I live in a far classier environment than I feel comfortable in. My wife fits right in. She's from Connecticut. These are her people, you know? But I really do think that if I were to tear up somebody's lawn, or God forbid, let my own grass just grow a few inches too long. Have you ever seen that episode of The X-Files where there was like a monster that would kill you if you violated the rules of the
This is
HR?
Kind of a reoccurring event. No, I have not.
I
only watch sports on TV.
Well, The X-Files hasn't been on. Well,
does that mean
a
new
episode?
Do you judge me for that? Does that mean I'm narrow?
I don't think it means that you're narrow, because I only ever reference shows that went off the air in 1994. So I don't think that I'm in any position to really judge your cultural lexicon.
Thank you. I appreciate that. Now,
did you ever see this one episode of Star Trek The Next Generation from 1991? And you're like, no, obviously not.
I used to watch Star Trek years ago when I was hanging out at these girls' house, and I was like 12 or 13, and they were 15 and 16. And I was enamored, and I would have watched anything that they put on TV.
Absolutely, yeah.
Right? Because I was just hanging out there. And so that's what I really watched a lot of Star Trek, because they would watch it. And so, Captain Kirk with a different girl on every planet. Come on, man.
I am a huge diehard Star Trek fan, but I'm really specific about it. I'm not a huge fan of Star Trek Voyager. I'm right now, for the first time ever in my life, trying to watch Star Trek Deep Space Nine, because I'm 20 years behind whatever's on TV. And it's alright. It's not bad. But Star Trek The Next Generation is really my favorite.
Oh, really? You
know, I'm so stoked about a new Captain Picard series coming out. I really hope that they don't ruin it.
Good God.
I've actually written...
You're starting to scare us now. Be careful.
A little bit of insider baseball. I wrote an article a while ago now about how I genuinely believe watching Star Trek The Next Generation growing up helped make me a better Marine by the time I was old enough to serve. And the article itself, between us listeners and you and I, kind of a throwaway article. You know, some days it's a slow news day and you need something to talk about. I'm passionate about Star Trek, so I talked to my editor and was like, hey, man, can I do this? And they were like, sure. But this isn't the article that's going to win anybody a Pulitzer, right? But it was immediately stolen by another large military outlet, one that a lot of people have heard of, I'm sure, but I won't drop their name. They stole it and literally plagiarized the entire premise, just changed some of the words around here and there, and published it like 4 days later. And when I confronted their editor-in-chief about it publicly on Twitter, the way they responded was by quietly offering me a job on the side to get me to not say anything about it. So Star Trek still plays a big role, apparently, in foreign policy. I didn't think so. I've done a million articles about really important topics that no one felt the need to steal. I wrote one about Captain Picard, you know, and that's the one that gets plagiarized.
You know what? There's an old saying, you know. I build 500 buildings, right? I build 500 buildings. Do you think they call me,
I know this one.
Yeah. Do you think they call me?
I'm waiting to hear how you're going
to do it. Do you think they call me Alex the Building Builder? No. I build 50 bridges. You think they call me Alex the Bridge Builder? No. I have sex with one elephant. And I'm Alex the Elephant Guy the rest of my life. So
yeah, right. Anyway, but you know, I'll clean that up a little bit. You know, yeah. I'll say this: I actually wouldn't really mind if I could somehow build a career out of being Alex the Star Trek Guy.
Why don't you? Let me tell you, it's not like you can't. We've had this conversation when you were going to write something about UFOs, and you were telling me, "Look, dude, UFO stuff is like." It's like glowing red hot, Okay, when you write about that stuff. And it's discouraging, right? Because you can do all kinds of great content. And blip, blip, blip. And then you do, like, something stupid. Because it happens to me, you know, here. When I do stupid radio, it blows up.
Absolutely, man. I can tell you, if I were to go back through my tenure at NewsRep, and I wrote a lot of articles for NewsRep, right? But if I could... I'll sort them all by how many clicks they got and how much loiter time people spent on the site reading those articles.
Depressing.
The top ones are all throwaway articles, like why Star Trek's cool and what I think about BB guns. You know? But then you'll find, like, the real hard-hitting stuff, like the deep dives that I did into the ways that North Korea was circumventing sanctions.
Oh, speaking of which.
Or, you know, the ways that China is positioning itself to really be the diplomatic and economic leader of the 21st century.
Speaking of which.
And nobody will click on those stories. You know, the diehards that really like to be well-informed will, but everybody else is like, hey, man, I want to click on this picture of a bear midriff.
Yeah. Exactly.
Which is one of our greatest – this is like a really sad story. One of the biggest traffic drivers NewsRep ever had was an article about that Marines United scandal. Right. And I would love to tell you that it's because people were so interested and concerned with the way that these Marines and Marine veterans were taking advantage of these women and were objectifying them. But honestly, I firmly believe that it's because we had a picture of a female Marine bearing midriff as the feature photo of the article, which wasn't from the Marines United scandal. It was obviously with someone's permission.
Right.
But all it took was a bare young woman's midriff to, you know, drive millions of clicks to this story, which is kind of disheartening, you know, especially when it's a story about how Marines are objectifying these women, you know. It's just the nature of the world that we live in today. I think most people, when they're scrolling through their Facebook feeds and stuff like that, they're not really looking to be well-informed. They're looking to be distracted from how crappy their day is. And a bear midriff will do it. You know,
maybe I got to find some bear midriffs. I would tell you though, I was just in Las Vegas yesterday, and man, what a shit show! You know,
it is my belief that Las Vegas has the most beautiful women per capita of any city in the United States.
Well, you need to go there, and you'll be dissuaded by that in very few minutes. I
spent a lot of time there. Why was it not good?
No, it was horrible. It was a disaster.
I feel like every trip to Vegas ends with someone feeling that way, though.
Well, let me just tell you this. I think Vegas might be different on the weekends, right? When the jet setters come in and they go clubbing and what. The Monday crowd in Vegas, right?
Not so hot.
Cannot match a pair of pants with a shirt. Doesn't go to the gym and doesn't get out in the sun, right? Yeah, put that together.
It's kind of like the Monday crowd in the strip club, right?
Likes to dress in their crazy Vegas costume and likes tattoos.
I will say, back when I was stationed in 29 Palms, we would go to Vegas on the weekends all the time.
Right.
But because we were PFCs and Lance Corporals throughout most of that time,
right,
you know, we'd go there with $50 in our pocket.
Oh, yeah.
So we would literally just go sit at the slot machines to get free drinks. We would make that $50 last in nickels as long as possible.
How to leverage $50, right? And that had to, and you had to eat too, but you can eat cheap there, you know.
Yeah, absolutely.
And into a whole weekend.
Yeah, you really could. You could make $50 last a weekend. All you needed was to find one really cheap room, usually off the strip. You know what I mean? What's that town right outside of Las Vegas? Prim.
Prim.
We actually had our ball in Prim one year. But, you know, you get a hotel room at Prim, costs $60. All five of you chip in $12, you know, and then you've got $38 to go exchange for nickels so that you can sit at a slot machine and collect free drinks.
And drink.
And that was how I spent my early 20s, you know. But and actually, it wasn't the first time I ever went to Vegas, I was working for Skip Barber Racing, and I went out there to work a race at Las Vegas Motor Speedway. And as a lot of guys, I'm sure, listening are aware, a lot of times when you work for companies like that, you travel on your dime, and then you submit an expense report after, saying, you know, I spent this much on a hotel, I spent this much on food, and I need to be reimbursed. I was 19 years old, and a mechanic. I didn't have any money, you know? So when they sent me out to Las Vegas for my first away race, so I hadn't even started collecting, like, real mechanics checks yet, I went out there with like $13. I slept in our trailer, like our car trailer. Didn't want to tell anybody, you know, because I was the new guy.
Right,
you know, so climbed into the hospitality trailer. I ate the Pop-Tarts out of the hospitality trailer for breakfast before they opened.
Right.
You know? But it was my introduction to making mission. And oddly enough, I met a number of people on that trip that I ended up running into in the Marine Corps a little bit later. I think a lot of guys that were working in racing in that era, in the early 2000s, realized that this is a terrible job and I'd be better off in the military.
That's sad. That is sad. The all right, let's talk about some stuff. First of all, the loadout. Tell everybody what you're doing again, just to remind everybody, and then let's talk about some of the cool stuff that you're going to be checking out. Because, you know, I would say that most Marines are gear assholes. We're intrigued by it. We like it, and so this is going to evolve into a cool segment. So tell everybody what you're doing, and then tell people about some of the cool stuff you're looking at this week.
Yeah, you got it. If you guys have heard me on this show before, you're probably familiar that I've been a longtime writer for News Rep, previously Soft Rep. But last week, I left News Rep and took over as the managing editor at a website called The Loadout Room, which loadoutroom.com. Really encourage you to go check it out. Most of what we do is gear reviews, you know, tactical stuff, military stuff, law enforcement stuff, and just outdoorsman type of gear reviews. Now, to be honest with you, I'm not the gear expert. You know how everybody has that one friend who's got the $10,000 everything, right? They have the most expensive version of everything that you can get. For me, it's my buddy Sean. Whatever there is that he's interested in, he's got the best version of it on the market. And that's just, that's what he likes. He likes to collect that bragging right, you know?
Right.
I have a very different approach. I like to buy good gear that my wife isn't going to yell at me over when she looks at the bank statement, you know? I'm always budget minded.
See, I got gear shamed earlier in the show when I said that I have a mouse, a Logitech mouse that cost me $110, and so somebody tried to gear shame me, and I, you know, I'm not having that, and so
Will you use your mouse for a living?
Hello.
This is your career.
Hello, I'm not a chump, right?
Yeah.
And hey, just so you know, I haven't told you this, but I'll tell you this now. I've got a trademark now. Post-traumatic winning is now trademark. So boom, bitches, I need a $110 mouse.
You know, I've been making similar claims because I just recently established a company. Although, you know, this is insider baseball, but as a writer, you basically work for yourself. I'm a freelancer for lots of outlets, and I'm a staff guy for a couple different outlets. But for the most part, you're a 1099 contractor as a writer, you know? And so for tax purposes, I established a business. So now I'm technically a business owner, and I mean, not that anyone cares, but I keep saying it to my wife. Like, well, you know, as a business owner.
Let me give you my opinion, not as your husband, but not as a business owner. And yes, now, so yeah, so I got gear shamed earlier today, and so what happened was I broke one of the mouse traveling. One of the buttons stopped working because I didn't put it in the storage place I normally use. I let it be a little bit adrift in my pack. Something sprang one of the buttons, and I couldn't get it to go back in and do whatever it was. And, you know, taking a mouse apart, like, doesn't really work like that. But last night, after I got back and learned about the trademark, I was looking at the dysfunctional mouse, right, sitting next to the functional mouse with a...
But you were empowered by this new trademark strength that you...
I was invigorated. I felt the strength of 10 Grinches. So I looked at the... So I was moving the backup mouse that I have to use for the desktop when the primary mouse goes expeditionary. So then the dormant mouse is sitting over on the other side of the table, and I look at it, and I get, now this is how serious I was. This is, and a gear asshole will understand this. I got the headlamp on, right, with the horizontal headband and then the band over the top of the head. I turn that LED on thing on. I turn it up to its lightest, and I pried the working side up and looked at it. Didn't see anything that I would say, geez, I wonder. So then I thought, well, this one must not be seating right. What am I doing? So I pulled it up as high as I could pull the dysfunctional button that rendered the mouse dysfunctional, and with the idea that I was going to switch the primary button on it. I could still use this thing. I'll move the primary button to the right button as opposed to the left button. So that's what I was going to do. So then I thought, well, let me just look at it. And I messed with it and it started working again. And I was like, and now I have two functional $110 mouses from Logitech. And
here's the thing, though.
And, a trademark so everybody can fuck off, right?
Well, had you never decided that you were willing to... Because, I mean, you had to make that ORM decision in your head, right? You were like, there's a chance...
I don't do ORM.
You don't do ORM?
No. I don't do it. I don't even understand it. I was the opso. Guys, you say, do you want me to do an ORM? I'm like, if you want to, I don't care. Is it safe? Well, you don't need to draw me a picture, right? Just don't fuck it up.
I have a more pragmatic approach to ORM. The way I've always addressed ORM is not by filling out the form. I've always approached it with just kind of like a pros and cons list in my head. What's going to go wrong? What can I do to mitigate that? And if I can't mitigate it, how bad is it going to be if that goes wrong? Right?
If you're not thinking like that, then you're a shithead. What are you doing in a leadership position if that thought isn't rolling around through your head? When somebody gives you a fucking form to fill out.
A group of 10 Marines. It's not as easy to employ that strategy when you're making a hard decision for yourself.
Well, you know? The self thing is. Because that's when your wife, that's when the looming presence of your wife is important.
Agreed. I try to use the ORM approach.
I could do something really irrational right now.
I don't sit down and write it out necessarily, but I always try to incorporate that. What's the worst case scenario and what would I do if the worst case scenario came? A good example would be, you know, I just got a couple different job offers recently and I was trying to decide what was the right one to take.
Yes.
And, you know, some of them paid more, but maybe had less, career potential. Some of them had more career potential,
like
but less
that.
Money.
Career potential.
Or vice versa, you know, and so trying to weigh those, I really did sit down and write down. Okay, what good things can come of this in 5 years? What bad things could come of this in 5 years? What could I do to mitigate those risks? And when it was all said and done, I came to a conclusion, but I still wasn't that sure. But at least I could feel, I made the best call I could, right? You know what I mean? And I do think that that's an important thing to do. And sometimes it does help to sit down and write it down, maybe just for me. But I'd encourage people to try it. I really would. But anyway, to get back to the gear we were talking about in the first place. I just recently started doing YouTube reviews for the sake of the loadout room, which is an entirely new thing for me. You know, I have a face for writing, which is the reason why I write, you know, but, I've been doing these gear reviews primarily about books so far, just because that's what I really like. But I also hired a couple of guys that just live in the outdoors and are doing a lot more outdoor specific gear reviews. But one of the best parts of this job is that I've just been getting, I mean, every day, it's like Christmas, man. The postman comes with three more boxes of stuff that some company sent me for free so that I can try to break.
Wow.
And,
how do we tap into that? How does All Marine Radio benefit from that?
Well, All Marine Radio, I'll tell you, it's surprisingly simple. The first thing you need is reach. Right?
Right.
I'm fortunate that the loadout room has a significant reach.
I can help you get reach more.
You're increasing the reach. Yeah,
yes.
Everything that can increase the reach benefits you,
so
right?
Can you send me a box of shit every week?
Maybe not every week, but I'd be happy to send you some stuff to review for sure, man.
Send me some stuff, and then I'll send it to somebody who calls in or emails me and said I'd love to try that. So
yeah, absolutely. We'll have to talk about it. I would love to.
All right.
But, you know, every time you get gear, you have to, basically, the way that it all works, here's the backside.
That's your typical Marine gear asshole in action. Hey, could you send me some stuff?
I got to tell you, but you actually, there's a professional reason behind
that. Of course. Come on. Like, I'd just be glomming free shit off you. Come on.
No, that's literally everybody I know from the Marine Corps since I took this job. I've gotten so many emails, Facebook messages, and tweets. From dudes I haven't talked to since the barracks that are all of a sudden like, hey, man, if you need an expert, I know I got out of the Marine Corps in 2001 and since then I've worked for FedEx, but I am an optics expert. And if you need somebody to review the new Crate Club crates, I'd be happy to take them all for free.
No problem.
Yeah. Yeah. But, but some of these guys, to be honest with you, some of the guys that have reached out to me really are experts and I am excited about working with them. But some of them are just, you know, dudes that are trying to score some free gear. I can't blame you. That's basically what I do for a living now. I used to get up every morning and come. I would stay up late at night to do my outlines for the next stories. You know, So I'd get up every morning, look at my outlines. I'd usually prioritize them in order of which one was the hottest or which one I felt as though I could tolerate focusing on first, right? Everything's different when it comes to a gear review website. Things aren't timed to, you know, the news cycle. There isn't really a timeliness
factor.
What's
it like? What's it like to be emancipated from that? You must be like your life is settled down. I mean, you know what I mean?
And it's been crazy. So it's been a week and a half now, and it is so much more different than I anticipated. I don't really know what to do with myself, to be totally frank. You know,
You want to know when I experienced that? When I stopped doing talk radio, every day you got to read, right? You got to produce, you got to do content, which is what you were doing. And there's that constant boot on the back of your neck to be good, right? And
yep.
Right, and to how do I say it? To be current and to be good. There's and you got to read and you got
to
you know.
And
then when I would go on active duty,
somebody might. See just one, listen to one of your shows or read just one
right,
of my articles,
right.
and
that'll
be what
be good.
They base their view of you or I on.
And so that pressure.
Everyone has to be good.
Yeah, that pressure. When I would go on active duty to go to Iraq and Afghanistan, I would feel the greatest sense of peace because all I had to do was my work. I didn't have to answer to this thing, news cycle thing.
I totally
thing.
Understand that.
Yeah.
I totally understand. You know, and. The first thing that washed over me was, at first, initially, it was very difficult for me to unplug, so I was still constantly checking my phone. I have a number of different apps that I use to keep track of developing stories. I've talked about some of them on the show before.
What's number one?
Well, to be honest with you, Twitter, believe it or not. I mean, I use a couple of different apps that track things that are trending on Twitter that'll shoot me notifications, like if the word explosion is used... more often than not in one regional area, I'll get a notification saying, you might want to check this out.
Right.
I've got a number of keywords, F-22, F-35, you know, stuff like
right,
that.
Right.
So Twitter really is a valuable asset. There's a lot of knowledge on Twitter.
I agree with you. I tell people that when something happens, if you go to Twitter and you search on whatever explosion, right? And then you go to latest, you'll see, right, the different people bombing in as they bomb in. And
absolutely.
There's no better way to follow a story that's unfolding right now than on Twitter.
You know, and I'm fortunate that, you know, over the years, I've been able to kind of develop a combination of, I've got a group of people I follow on Twitter that are all professionals that work in the same industry and are very well informed and very plugged in. You know, people in the White House press pool, the DoD press pool, you know, things like that. And then guys like Tyler Rogaway over at the War Zone, which is a part of the drive. I mean, that guy knows everything about military aviation that you could imagine, you know. And I'm fortunate that guys like him and the guy that runs the Aviationist and stuff, I have a good relationship with them, so I can shoot him an email and say, hey, man, what have you heard about this stuff? You know, and we can kind of pool our resources a little bit. But for the most part, it really is just a matter of constantly paying attention, you know, and which drives my wife insane.
Right.
That, you know, my phone is always within arm's reach. There's always notifications all over the screen of it, you know, whether or not I open it or not. I've constantly got people messaging me, emailing me, calling me to say, hey, did you hear about this thing? Because, you know, it was my job for years now to break stories, right? So I didn't take a day off in 3 years. I wrote articles from next to my wife's hospital bed while she and my daughter were sleeping the day my daughter was born.
Right.
I submitted articles the day my dad died. The one day I took off during that three-year stretch was like a half day, and it was because my editor made me take the rest of the day off when my dad died. But it happened to be the same day that some things were jumping off in Syria, so we had to get coverage for it before I could walk away from my computer. You know, the news... People don't realize that the news doesn't stop when you have a personal emergency, you know? But the loadout room is a whole different beast. I am constantly engaged and busy, but I have a lot more autonomy in how I go about doing it. I set the timeliness standards as the managing editor, so I'm the one giving out the assignments. I'm the one managing the team of writers. So it's a whole different animal for me. I'm writing significantly less and managing other people significantly more.
The cycle is so much different because
when
it's not an hourly cycle, when it's or a daily cycle, and you get to set it. I mean, ultimately, you'll live or die by what you set, but.
I can establish the standard based on what I think I can manage, you know? Yeah. Like, here's a great example. For the first time in years, I got an email at 9 o'clock at night on Friday, and I didn't respond to it. I waited until the next day.
Whoa!
That's a big step for me. That's a significant step.
People think, what in God's name are they talking about?
When you work in the news, there is no such thing as a day off. There's no such thing as I'm not on the clock. If you want your career to advance, you need to show that you're committed and you're willing to push, for the good stories.
Right. And the people that read your stuff, they expect that you're going to comment on it.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. Right. And when you don't, one of the biggest complaints that I would get as a senior staff writer at NewsRep, and when I was running Fighter Sweep, is it wouldn't always be about what I was covering. It would be about what I didn't cover. They would infer a meaning behind a lack of coverage, which is something that I don't think a lot of people consider. But let's say, for instance, right now with Iran, the tensions are obviously really high between the United States and Iran. There's concerns about the Strait of Hormuz, and we're sending a lot of hardware that way. If we don't discuss that on NewsRep, which I'm sure someone has, maybe Stavros or one of the guys that are there, if you don't discuss that on NewsRep, your readers assume that there's an intention or a motive behind it. Like you're siding with Iran because you're not shining a light on their transgressions, or you're siding with Donald Trump because you're not criticizing something that he said. People assume that omission means collusion, but sometimes it really just means that there's only 7 guys on the staff, and we can only cover so much. But people expect you to produce, and they don't really think about the human element on the other side of the production. That's not a criticism. It's the nature of literally every industry, right? The difference just is that because we live and die on the internet, we get the most outrage, out of any of the industries, I think. You're not going to usually see people going on all caps lock tirades in a Walmart aisle, but you definitely see it every day on a news site.
Nice. But the
loadout room's great, man, though, because I don't ever have to talk about politics, people very rarely send me death threats.
But you want to. Okay, so give us a couple pieces of gear that Marines would be interested that you're taking a look at.
Well, I'll tell you, the first one that I'm working on is the new Ranger kit by My Medic, which is actually a really cool little setup. It's set up, it could fit on your flak jacket, your molly pack. It's got everything in it that you would need to manage, I would say, probably your day-to-day medical concerns. It's not a trauma kit. It's not an IVAC.
It's not. Okay.
But if you're in, let's say, a field environment for an extended period of time, you're in a survival situation. Right. Maybe you're going on a long hike in a third world country, like my buddy just did down in Peru.
Right.
This is the sort of thing that's going to stave off infection, that's going to take care of your bumps and your bruises, even burns. A lot of people would call kits like this an ouch pouch, but this is a little bit bigger and more advanced than an ouch pouch. But it's the type of kit that, if you need to irrigate a wound so that you can suture it up, you can do that. But if you have an abrasion that you just want to make sure doesn't get infected, you can throw a bit of Neosporin on it and a good quality bandage. But what's great about it is that it's really small. My concern is because it's so small, I'm not sure that you could take the gear that you need out of it without exploding the kit, right? And then having a real trouble getting the kit back together and back on the side of your pack. So that's going to be what my review is really going to be based on, is I know that this kit has got a lot of valuable gear in it. It's all stuff that we're familiar with, It's the same combat gauze you've seen for a million years. But in this really handy, little pouch, it's got the tourniquet right on top. But my question is, can I open this, take out a Band-Aid and some Neosporin or some sutures, and then put it back together so that I can use it again tomorrow? I think you might be able to, but that I think might be the biggest challenge, and that'll be what my review will really be based on. But then on the totally other end of the spectrum, I've also got these really cool microphones from a company called 12 Gauge Microphones. And what they do is they take shotgun shells and 50 cal shells of the two microphones he sent me, and they're professional grade microphones housed inside a shotgun shell, a 50 cal shell. And I'm really excited about putting these through their paces. They're so cool.
What are they, little tiny microphones?
Yeah, they're primarily used for instruments, not necessarily for the type of stuff that you and I do.
Got it.
They're meant to be mounted and then fed into a soundboard, you know, so that you can record drums, guitar, and things like that. They're used for studio recording. I think it's such a cool idea. You know, the studio recording microphones you'd normally use are about the same size as a 12-gauge shell, but they just, you know, it's a little black cylindrical tube. You know, it's nothing.
Right.
But by putting it into a hollowed-out shell, it really makes it like a cool thing for your shelf, if nothing else. So I just think it's neat. I'm excited about it. Let's see. What's some of the other? I've got all kinds of fun stuff.
Give me one more.
All right. How about Lifesaver's new portable filter canteen, which is, you know, it looks just like the regular old thermos that you'd, you know, carry your coffee to work in.
Yeah.
But it's got a 99.99% carbon filter and a pump in it so that you can fill it up and pump it by extending the handle at the bottom, or you could literally pump water directly in from a water source using an included hose.
How does the filter work? So I dump it in, it gets filtered, and then I drink it out of it?
Absolutely. So the top is just like a thermos top.
Right.
The body of it looks like a regular thermos, except when you look through it, you can see there's an internal cylinder inside the thermos, and that's actually the filter.
Got it.
When you pump it from the bottom, it pumps the water through that internal cylinder and into the external space. The water you drink out of it's completely clean. You could fill this up in a toilet and then walk around drinking all day.
Maybe not.
I might not do the toilet water. We'll see. I think I'll probably take it out to Lake Lanier.
Come on, that would be a pretty good headline.
Yeah, that would be a pretty good headline. The last thing I'm real pumped about is I've got a whole bunch of sappy plates and load bearing vests coming in, and I was thinking, how do you actually review one of these? You know, there's plenty of videos out there.
What's the civilian application of sappy?
Well, it's not necessarily for, you know, we do military gear reviews, we do law enforcement gear reviews, so it's not all necessarily meant for civilians, although civilians can purchase these products.
If you're
a prepper, and you just like to be prepared. But what I've been trying to think of a way to review gear like that that's interesting, and the best thing that I can come up with so far, I mean, there's already videos online of people shooting these plates with AK-47s and 7.62s, 308s, whatever. I think the best thing I can do is just give my daughter a hammer and let her spend a few minutes with it.
Yeah.
And see how much damage she can do.
Right.
You know? Because what I would be interested in, I suppose, if I was going to spend $500 on a load-bearing vest and a plate for it, would be, I want to make sure that this thing's going to last me 10 years. I want to make sure that if I don't get shot this week, it won't wear out by next week. So, honestly, man, what I might end up doing is looking like an idiot and just wearing this thing around, doing a bunch of dumb stuff in the woods for a few weeks, just to see if I can get the straps to tear, you know, just to see. But basically, the exciting part of this job for me is it's a chance for me to go outside and do dumb shit all day with a video camera, try to cut that together into something that people might find interesting or informative, and then put that up online. It's like a hobby that I get paid to do. I'm pretty pumped about it.
All right, now we're going to switch gears. Let's go back to the old Alex. We seized a North Korean container ship. Well, not a container ship, but it was a
cargo ship. I think it was an oil ship, wasn't it?
I thought it was a coal ship. I thought it was transporting coal. And so, it's just essentially an empty hull that they have cranes on it and stuff to do that. Give me your thoughts on it and tell everybody what those ships do, and then give me your thoughts on it.
Well, the first thing people need to make sure they understand is that the United States has incredible economic power and leverage when it comes to placing sanctions on nations like North Korea. Because not only is our economy the largest and most powerful in the world, but a lot of the other large developed economies in the world follow our lead. You know, so when we champion economic sanctions in the United States, often the United Nations will follow suit. So it won't just be U.S. sanctions, it'll be U.N. sanctions, which is what we see in North Korea, right? And it's really, really had a huge effect on their economy. You won't necessarily know it in the U.S. media, but North Korea is in as difficult a position economically as it's ever been in, you know, at least in contemporary history, which is the reason why you've seen such a huge upturn in North Korean soldiers trying to make it into South Korea because they're starving to death. That's how bad things are getting.
If you read, if you want some interesting reading, read the medical report of what they found in the soldier that on video took off running and they were shooting at him. And
they shot him five times.
Yeah, so. And he survived. But
they airlifted him to a nearby hospital, and they found parasitic worms inside his stomach that were more than a foot long. And other than that, all he had were hardened corn kernels. That was clearly all he had eaten in the last day or so. And what you need to remember is these guys on the border, these are the most well-equipped, well-fed, and presentable troops North Korea has to offer. Because they know those are the ones that everyone's looking at. This is the window into North Korea. Every time CNN's talking about North Korea, they cut you a live shot of the border. And the North Korean soldiers standing there. Those soldiers are better equipped, better fed than the North Korean military that you'll find elsewhere in the nation.
Yeah,
and they're all better equipped and better fed than you'll find most of the civilian populaces. So things are really bad in North Korea thanks to these sanctions. But because we're not talking about it regularly, we tend to think that things with North Korea and the United States have just kind of simmered down into nothing. We're still actively hurting them with these sanctions, and they're aware of it, you know. So when talks kind of stumbled in February between Donald Trump and Kim Jong-un, Donald Trump really was in a position where he could just walk away. North Korea financially is not going to get better until we decide to let them get better. Donald Trump really does hold the majority of the cards. So when he walked away, the way the media presented it may not have been entirely accurate, but the truth of the matter is it might have been the right call, depending on what the demands really were in the room. So now fast forward to this past week. North Korea has recently started posturing. You know, they started doing weapons tests again that weren't necessarily in violation of this informal agreement that Kim and Trump have. But we're clearly meant to get some attention, right? You know, first they advertised that they tested a new weapon that really looked like it was just like a rocket-propelled grenade. Then they tested some new short- to medium-range ballistic missiles. The idea is really that Kim is trying his best to paint Donald Trump in a negative light in the international press to force him back to the negotiating table. It's a solid strategy.
Right.
So what are we doing in return, right? We've been aware of the fact that these ships have been circumventing sanctions into North Korea for some time. I actually know a guy who's worked on part of the reconnaissance program. It's a combination of satellites and aircraft that they're using to track a lot of these vessels. Some of them are China-flagged. Some of them are Singapore-flagged. Some of them are flagged through three intermediary nations to, you know, so on and so forth. It's still good business to get things like coal, oil, stuff like that into North Korea. It's honestly still good business to pull some exports out of North Korea that have been barred by these sanctions. So what are we really doing by capturing and escorting this vessel? We've known about other vessels that have done this. We've even released pictures before of vessels doing it. So why did we do it now? It's a response, you know, to the recent North Korean acts that are trying to put Donald Trump in a bad position. This is the Trump administration, the United States, showing that we still have more leverage that we could use here, you know. And I think what we're going to see is we're going to keep seeing an escalation for a little while here where both North Korea and the United States are trying to demonstrate to one another that it's in the other's best interest to cooperate. But ultimately, neither are going to make any real headway until they can find a way to do it that lets Trump save face and lets Kim save face within their own respective nations. That's both of their priorities, especially
but
in
the
U.S.
seizing,
the 2020
seizing,
election.
The seizing of a North Korean ship is a new increase that we had talked about it. We talked about what they did at sea,
yep.
Right? And so the seizing of a vessel impacts them as a nation. And
absolutely.
So and
it
so
worse than that, it sends right. a message that we could do this again and right. we will do it again.
Right.
You know.
Right.
So what we're saying is we're now challenging your illegal revenue sources as well as your legal revenue sources.
Right.
If you're Kim, that's a big threat.
It's a huge threat. All right, we're going to switch gears here. I want to talk about Iran. You've written a little bit about it. You followed stuff. But to me, I had the occasion. I ran down last, I guess it was a week ago today, a week ago yesterday. You know, there was headlines that, you know, aircraft carriers were surging.
Yeah. I think you can tell by my chuckle my position on this.
Right. And so I went looking, because we both know that stuff doesn't happen, right? That stuff takes months to get in motion, and it takes a long time. So you just go.
And it was one of Mattis's things that he really wanted the Navy to be more able to react more quickly. But, yeah.
More dynamic.
nothing happens overnight.
Right. And so if you know anything, you're like, all right, what's this about? And so I wound up watching. I went looking for where Dunford had made the statements he made that people focused on, and it was a Senate Appropriations Committee subcommittee meeting on defense. So it was in a small room, and I had to go looking for it. Then I found it, and I watched the whole thing. And you know what? I love listening to guys like Dunford Mattis, right, in long format. When you know, as you told us, when you got to distill something to 300 to 500 words,
a lot of the nuance is lost.
Oh, a lot of it.
Yeah. Or I would say this, the nuance is lost. The context is even often lost, you know?
Right. And so then you get a chance to, hear it and you're like, oh, well, I feel better about all this. So he talks about, we got intelligence late last week that they were moving some of their assets, right? That could in fact harm American personnel in the region. And we picked up the phone and we called them and told them, hey, don't do this. And they did it anyway. And so my job, right, is to, you know, is to make sure that we have the appropriate tools in place. So I gave the orders to the Lincoln, that was headed to the Persian Gulf anyway to proceed there at a greater rate of speed. And they're in the process of doing that. In fact, they're almost there. So he kind of laid it out. If you're Iran, it's not like you don't, do you think that America's just not going to react? You know, what's that all about? What's going on?
So I've got some strong opinions about this. The first one being that tensions between the United States and Iran aren't new this week, even though the media is treating it like it is. You know, we saw the media take the exact same approach to North Korea not all that long ago. They took the exact same approach to Syria not all that long ago, which is if there's the possibility of a war, we are going to inundate the news cycle with stories that make it seem inevitable that there is a war. And I mean, obviously it drives clicks, it sells newspapers, it gets viewers in. But the truth of the matter is that the Strait of Hormuz has been, a conflicted space for a long time. The Strait of Hormuz is a waterway that is our only access to the Persian Gulf, right? And, it's right on Iran's coast. Iran's Revolutionary Guard and their fast attack boats and a couple of the other assets they have, they feasibly could use those assets to block the Strait of Hormuz and bar our access to the Persian Gulf, bar commercial access to the Persian Gulf, which
easily
would have far-reaching economic effects.
And it's easy. The Straits of Hormuz are narrow, right? And they could do that easily.
But now the thing that we need to take into account here is that that isn't anything new. The
right.
United States has sent aircraft carriers and other naval ships, often Arleigh Burke-class destroyers, through the strait specifically to show Iran that we're not going to budge, we're not going to back down as they posture and make threats.
Now, let me just tell you, when I was on an aircraft carrier, guarding nuclear weapons in the 80s, in 1986, 87, and 88, mostly 87 and 88. So we didn't go in the Persian Gulf at this time. The carriers did not. Now, the rest of them, and we didn't go through because of the danger to a carrier in the Straits of Hormuz, specifically
Absolutely.
The missile envelope. So that changed in the 90s, and they started going into the Persian Gulf and operating up there. And because
your example is a perfect, with what you're citing is a perfect example
right.
of how this is not a new concern. You know, we've been concerned about this ever since the Iranian Revolution, right? Now, it's also important for us to understand that as much as people like to portray Donald Trump as a warmonger, his foreign policy has been largely toothless. You know, the only real military action that we've taken at Trump's direction has been two missile strikes against inconsequential targets in Syria, right? Neither of them had very much in the way of long-lasting effect. Neither had much in the way of diplomatic effect. They were both really just us demonstrating that we're willing to conduct diplomacy by missile if you push us into it, right?
And let me just hop in there. I've done some interviews with people that come on the program like you, and one guy's name is Grant Newsham, and he does the Pacific, right? And he says, look, and it always makes me laugh when he says this. He says, for the first time, literally in decades, the United States is standing up on its hind legs in the Western Pacific.
Yeah.
Literally. Barack Obama, no.
That's true.
The Chinese,
true.
The Chinese did everything they did, as did the North Koreans, with strongly worded objections by the State Department and no actions to back it up. The Bush administration did the same thing, as did the Clinton administration. So there's 8, 16, 24 years, right, of being on bended
now,
knee.
It doesn't change the reality of that, but I'll give the Bush administration a bit of a pass.
Come
because
on.
They were immediately engaged in the war on terror.
I don't care. You know? Oh, so that means you don't have responsibility for your other responsibilities.
Oh, no, you certainly do, but it also means that, like, the same $1 can only split so many ways.
Well,
right?
Well, you know what? China may be number two, right? The war is first, maybe China number two. But anyway,
oh, no,
I hear what you're saying.
Should've been.
I hear it, but I don't give them a pass. You can. You're nicer than me. But I don't give them a pass. I think their actions were bullshit. And so you see this in the Western Pacific. The same thing you see with Iran. Oh, like weaken, and these regimes are dictatorships, right? And they have a much longer perspective. For instance, were I the Chinese, what I would be thinking is, we need to do everything we can to promote Democratic candidates because Trump has us by the throat because he wants us to stop stealing intellectual property and he wants us to stop the forced transfer of technology. Our entire economic system is based on that.
I'm going to disagree with you on this one.
Okay.
I don't think that the Chinese government, the Chinese foreign policy strategy, cares that much about Donald Trump, big picture. The reason being is that Donald Trump could feasibly get reelected in 2020, at which point he could not be reelected in 2024. China doesn't worry about things in terms of election cycles like we do. China's plan is not, what are we going to do to position ourselves for 2020? China's plan is, what are we going to do to position ourselves for the next 100 years? What are we going to do to? They're a long time.
I don't think you're. When it goes into the shitter, and the Chinese people, it's not going the way they forecasted it. And,
things are already not going the way the Chinese people
right,
forecasted
and
it.
You will see, right? You will see Winnie the Pooh. You will see him get animated, and you will see him get active because they will not keep him around. And so,
I think that that's wishful thinking. You know, we said the same thing about Kim Jong Un and Kim Jong Il.
That's different. He's a military.
If you treat your people bad enough for long enough, they'll rise up and take care of you. We like to think that it is kind of true, but it's not true generationally.
North Korea and China are different. North Korea is a military dictatorship. China is a dictatorship, but
if you think that China isn't a dictatorship will of force,
well, no,
you're
I know,
right
but he does not have the same cult of personality that the guy in North Korea has. He can be deposed.
You're right. Xi Jinping does not need the cult of personality that Kim Jong Un has because the Chinese government is not predicated on Xi Jinping.
Well, I'm saying is that he will react because his franchise will be in danger.
This is what I'm telling you.
If the economy
doesn't change dramatically.
Here's
rid of Kim Jong Un, North Korea changes.
There's no doubt about that. My point is that can China negotiate these things that their economy is based on?
They don't need to. This is okay. China doesn't need
Riddle me this. Hold on. Riddle me this. So, what does China look like if it agrees to stop stealing intellectual property and stop forced technology transfers? Right
now,
let me finish the thought. Now the other nations around the world see that and they're like, "Holy shit." Well, we're not having it either. So now they've got to come to the table of modern nations, right, and sit down and play by the same rules that everybody else kind of sort of plays by. Okay? So what does that do to China?
I don't buy that that'll happen for a heartbeat, and I'll tell you why.
The
market will decide, not governments.
The market will decide.
We're seeing it in North Korea right now. It's the reason why we still have container ships that we need to capture and take away because they're getting around the sanctions because economically it's still good business to do business with North Korea, even though international sanctions say that that's illegal. China has too much influence, too much diplomatic power to be put in the same position that North Korea is currently sitting in. There's not going to be global sanctions placed on China because they're stealing our copyrighted, material. It's simply not going to happen because the global economy is too dependent on China. If we're all interdependent.
Okay, so this whole, our whole trade issue with China and the forced transfer of technology that companies have to do and the stealing of intellectual property, that the Chinese will never ever agree to that. Yay?
Well, no, I think that they will definitely agree. I just don't think that they'll follow through with what they claim that they'll do. The way that China does its business will shift. It'll have to shift, just like the way that we do business is going to have to shift throughout the 21st century. You always have to manage and mitigate these threats. But no, China's not going to turn on a dime and shift the way that they handle their entire industrial infrastructure just because Donald Trump says so. You know, Donald Trump could feasibly be gone in 2 years, but even if he's not, his interest could be elsewhere. It could be on a war with Iran. It could be on the next Stormy Daniels. The next president could be another Barack Obama that ignores the Pacific. So because of that, China doesn't need to kowtow to Donald Trump's tariffs because China already has a huge population of people that are living on just grains of rice a day. Their population is not going to rise up in the streets because it costs more to buy socks at Walmart. America's will. All right. And as a result of that, China has a lot more leverage in this situation than we do.
Hmm.
It won't play out like that in the media, and it won't play out like that politically, because in the United States, everything has to revolve around this 4-year presidential election cycle. Elsewhere in the world, they're not operating on our calendar. You know, China is going to remain a bad guy forever because it's more profitable to be a bad guy than it is to be on the level.
It's interesting because my Pacific guy says that China, because of the precarious position they're in relative to the world, that what they have to avoid and the way they've structured their economy extorts. You want access to our market, you got to play by these rules.
100% true.
Okay, so if the United States continues to tariff the Chinese, and then his other point is, you have to understand how big the American economy is.
It's okay? Huge.
The American economy is ginormous. That will have an impact on China, right? Chinese goods in the United States, yeah, we'll pay more for toilet paper, and we'll pay more for soccer balls, and we'll pay more for cell phones. But the American economy can absorb that. The hit that China's economy is going to take is going to be much tougher.
Now, here's the problem, though. That may well be true. The problem is who can stare at the other one for longer while it hurts, right? So now, Donald Trump can – this is the thing. You could take $10 out of the pocket of every Chinese citizen and $1 out of the pocket of every American citizen. Americans are going to make that a bigger deal.
No, you're right.
Than Chinese citizens.
No, and you've already seen what Joe Biden say. You know, I think this is much overblown. We can get along with the Chinese. And you've seen the news reports about the pork farmers in Iowa, how they're getting screwed, blah, 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 blah. And so you're right. That's the story that will be written.
So, Donald Trump is literally, a year and some change away from a new election,
right,
where he has to once again convince the American people, to keep him in office for 4 more years.
And if you were the Chinese, what would you do? You would bet against him, right?
Absolutely.
You'd do everything you could to help other candidates.
I'm sure that they will. But long-term, the long-term strategy that China's employing can be a war of economic attrition, I'm not saying economic attrition, literally send us both into a new, a recession or worse. But when I say economic attrition, I mean you can hurt industries in the United States far less than industries can be hurt in China with very little to no political backlash in China. They can still maintain a unified front. They can force their people to hurt on their behalf for their own diplomatic means. In America, Donald Trump is not a popular enough president to ask people to buy war bonds. He's not a popular enough president to tell people that you should use less rubber, like we did during World War II. He doesn't have the support for that. So when Donald Trump says, guys, this is a legitimate concern, because it is. You know, the way that our economies intermingle with China is a huge concern, and somebody does need to address it.
Right.
But Donald Trump has that uphill battle of convincing us that it's okay for us to hurt for a little while. It'll be better in the long run.
Right.
He's not a very good salesman, despite what he claims.
Right.
He hasn't been very good at selling this idea to the American people. He keeps saying things like China pays tariffs, which isn't true at all. We pay the tariffs. You know, the idea here, though, theoretically should be that it'll hurt in the short term and benefit us in the long term. The American people, by and large, are very unconcerned about the long term. They want more money right now. They want new laws right now. They want everything to be solved right now. And if you don't do it, we have another election in just a little while, and we'll get rid of you and find someone who promises us that they will.
So
Xi Jinping is not... he's not facing a re-election anytime soon.
Right. So the Chinese strategy ought to be, right, exactly what we're seeing play out, that we're not going to make that deal with you. And we'll go sideways.
Eventually come to the table.
Right. We'll go sideways and do the way we've done deals in the past, is that to the United States, you can have a deal with us. You just have to get on your knees and accept these terms. That's what
and they will do an excellent – this is one thing that China does exceptionally well. Xi Jinping is much more of a global villain than Vladimir Putin is.
Right.
Vladimir Putin trades on his villain persona when it comes to diplomacy. China, on the other hand, they really like to play the role of a developed, reasonable nation because they want to usurp America's role as the diplomatic leader of the planet. They want to take over as the diplomatic and economic – all roads lead to China, right? So in order to do that, you need to convey this image of being reasonable, and they certainly will. They will, when the going gets tough, sit down at a table with Donald Trump and hash out a deal that both Trump and the Chinese administration are able to take back to their respective nations and broadcast as a victory.
Right.
Nobody will lose in the agreement that the United States makes with China. Right. It will be presented as a win-win for all of us, right? China's not going to fulfill everything that they claim that they will. The United States, by and large, will. Because we hold ourselves to a very high standard, and if we don't, it's, you know, run through the media. At the end of the day, China is operating at an advantage just because they are not beholden to their citizenry, and we are, you know. We have to do the right thing for the American people. The Chinese government needs to do the right thing only for the Chinese government. I'm not saying that we're destined to lose, but what I'm saying is we need to characterize the threat properly in order to win, and I'm not sure that we're seeing that in the media right now.
Interesting stuff. You know, and to me, it's a fight that you have to fight.
I agree.
It's a
I really
fight
do.
So, I mean, Donald Trump, I think he's just accepting, you know, the world as it is and saying, look, if we're gonna do business with China, at some point it has to get out of this. We're a developing somehow or other special class of a nation. You're
absolutely
huge,
and not
right?
Not only
and
that,
you got, and you got to come to the table and you got to play by the rules.
I think we all know that China's never going to be 100% on the level, but if we never hold their foot to the fire, they'll never be on the level at all, right? So Donald Trump needs to do that. I think the other thing he needs to do that he's failing at right now, based on this morning's Twitter tirade, is he needs to sell it to the American people in a way that makes us understand how important what he's doing is.
Right.
You know, the mainstream media would be happy to tell you that every Donald Trump initiative is a bad one because it's a Donald Trump initiative. It's not true. You know, we need space defense. We need to engage with China. You know, we need freedom of navigation voyages in the South China Sea. But the Trump administration really needs somebody that can sell these ideas to the American people in an articulate way. And, you know, your press secretary should be good for that. Sarah Huckabee Sanders has not done an excellent job in that regard. The president should be good at that. That's usually how they get elected. Trump hasn't done a very good job of that either. The initiatives are important. The way that we're selling them to the American people, I think, is where we're failing.
Do you have it? No, I agree with you. All right. First of all, I appreciate your time today. And Alex Hollings, our guest, and spanning the world from gear at theloadout.com to still strong opinions on international events. And always enjoy that. Alex? Thank you very much, sir, for the visit, and until next time, tell everybody where they can find your work.
Well, first and foremost, you can find my work and the work of all my guys over on loadoutroom.com. You can also find a lot of my old foreign policy stuff, if that's what you want to read, over on the News Rep, although I'm not writing for them as frequently. You can also find me on We Are the Mighty and Popular Mechanics. Or if you want to just find me on social media, it's facebook.com/AlexHollingsWriter. Twitter is at AlexHollings52. Or you can go to AlexHollings.com and just email me directly about how pissed off you are. That's usually what people do.
All right, Alex Hollings. More coming up next on All Marine Radio right here on your home for it, the All Warrior Radio Network.